Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Beyond the Eclipse. This is episode 10, and we're going to be covering episode 10 of TLD, True Colors. And as always, I have with me the host and DM of TLD.
Hi.
That's V, in case you haven't caught up.
Oh, right, yeah. Hi, I'm V. Or Volley, or Volanda, or Valanda. Preferably not Valanda, but like whatever works.
And I'm Athode, Voice of Squash, and...
Greff.
I had Bolgrim in my head because Bolgrim is a very important character in this episode.
Yeah, Bolgrim in this episode, I'd forgotten the specifics of this episode, and my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a heavy one, but let's start at the beginning. The episode starts relatively, like, chronological to the last episode. We have Laffian sitting in a chair, having just experienced his mirror vision.
Nope, so and not sitting in a chair. They're all just standing in the mirror room.
Sorry, standing. Have a lot of people made this...
He was sitting in a chair. I'm like, no, he wasn't. He was standing in front of the mirror. There were no chairs in the mirror room.
No problem. Like, Laffian is just standing there. Laffian. He's called Ballas at this point.
Yeah.
Ballas is just standing there, and he's, like, psychically screaming into everybody's brain, if I understood it correctly.
Yeah. So that was kind of a result of the, like, Nat 1 wisdom fail. And we don't really do, like, results of fails. But we'd also been talking about... it kind of leads into one of the things of like gaining new abilities as you level up, like certain like thises or like certain thats. I like to tie them into plot points, and I saw a really good opportunity to not only have Laffin be able to explain where his sensor ability comes from, where he can pick up an object and do 24 hours. I wanted to give him the look back further than that so that we can learn stuff from the past. And that's actually based off of an idea we had from a former game that Neil and Archer and I were in, where we just had a little like a MacGuffin that basically if you held it, you could share your memories with someone. And I wanted a way to do that so that we could explore backstories really easily. I didn't expect it to be used the way it was, I'm not going to lie, but it was dope. It was good.
It gets used in a very impressive way. Yeah. I genuinely do have a... It was actually one of the like kind of things that I took away from when I started listening to you guys. I was just like, I genuinely want to try to introduce something like this to my home game. Unfortunately, home games are so wacky, you can never actually sit people down to do that. So I was very happy, and we'll get to it when we get to it. There's a scene where Squash is like, I want to do the memory thing. And that is Aether just like, I want to do the memory thing.
The reason that we experience all the psychic screams and all like this, that, and the other is because we wanted to show that that's what he did in the past. And it was, and I had like, I went through my old notes to make sure I hadn't forgotten it. And I kind of hadn't, I'd forgotten some things, but something I hadn't. But yeah, I had written down each of those like scenes in rough bullet form of like, you'll see this version and this and this. And of course, Caden. So I mean, he's put something in there for Caden. And I wanted to be able to show those bits in the past. So like him doing that fail was a really good way that I could actually just feed that into the story and let him have that ability. So I was glad that it happened. And I like the way that Arch actually played that entire bit of just like, I'm on the floor and crying, I can't cope with any of this. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what you would do. I love it.
Before I'm going to jump back a little bit.
Sorry.
I found a couple of things early in the episodes which I found kind of interesting. First one is that while Sultana's trying to move Laffian, Ral punches the mirror.
Yeah.
What was your, like, were you at any point like, oh no, are they going to fuck with the mirror? Or were you just like, it's invincible,
it's invincible.
Bolted to the floor.
It's why I never asked for a roll, because I don't believe you should let players roll if you don't want them to succeed, or rather, there are reasons that they shouldn't. If it's impossible for them to succeed, you shouldn't even be rolling, because that's really unfair. Because they've got a nat 20 and their bonuses are plus 20 and they can't do it because, you know, you can't lob an egg at the moon. Like, you physically can't do that. No matter how fucking good you are, you cannot lob an egg at the moon and hit the moon. So it's impossible to do. So you can do it, but you won't succeed. And I don't believe in making people roll when they really can't succeed. So the mirror was always invincible to any attacks like that.
We've talked a little bit about this, but I would just want to mention this. We've talked a little bit about this in other Beyond the Eclipse episode, but I just want to mention it real quick because I find it such a good idea. It's when your players pick a fight with a character that's way out of their level, and I'm going to cast a spell, and he needs to make a Wisdom DC saving throw. Okay, what's your DC? 13. Okay, he passes. Like, don't roll, just tell them.
Yep.
And that's the moment that players are like, Oh. It's such a good tell for the players, like, oh, we fucked up.
There are definitely, like, early level, it's really good to drop that, but it is terrifying to drop that in late game. Like, when someone's like, my spell DC, I've gone it all the way up to 19. Yeah, if he rolls a 1, he still passes. What? Stupid stuff like that. You're just like, nah, I don't need to roll. I'm good to...
But we then have later, like, Laffian, like, when he realizes that he's, like, screaming into everybody else's mind, he retreats into a private bubble inside his head where he even keeps Marnarch out.
Yeah.
And I found that kind of interesting. Like, that was a cool flair, and, like, it was interesting, like, a mental image of this, like, him, like, creating this little, like, psychic bubble around himself. But eventually he breaks that.
Yeah. He breaks that because Ral rugby tackles him to the ground, which I thought was the funniest shit. And I adored that so much. Punch the mirror. That doesn't work. Well, I'm going to rugby tackle him out of the room or whatever he does. And it's just, I think it's really funny. I like that.
And I find it quite funny when you're like, all right, Laffian releases the scream and everybody's taking psychic, make will saves, and then you take psychic damage. And I'm going to roll this one for Caden. And you will see the damage if you ever find his body. And I was... That's such a cruel joke. I laughed really hard on that.
I have that written down in my jokes. It's JK Caden.
It was very fun to listen to the crew freak out.
It's like, that's cruel. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I have to have fun too sometimes.
And then on 8-20, you do the shared vision thing.
Yeah.
And while I wasn't even casually listening, I was intently listening, taking notes. And I had to go back like 3 times to listen to that entire thing. I think this is probably not going to be a popular thing to say. Like, you're not going to love hearing this. I think you made it too vague and too fast.
Yeah, it was only supposed to be flashes.
Yeah, because I can tell by the time it's over, none of the three players realized what you just did. I think genuinely none of them, and we'll keep an eye out for it for next episode. I don't think they realized what happened. So at 8:20, really cool music starts playing, and Vig starts going through a vision. In the first one, there's a dwarf standing in front of you. He's on his knees and he's begging, like, I've told you where Two Knives is. And then you grab onto your sword and you start pulling it out of the sheath. That's clearly Sultana murdering somebody who is one of the final pieces for her to get to Two Knives. And then the second part is somebody with black scaled hands punching a kid who's like screaming out. And like, well, I guess that's Raoul murdering the kid, which is going to come up in a future episode. Or has it already come up?
No, it comes up in a future episode, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't remember it before. We'll find out how it goes. Then the third one is somebody who gets the back of a horse in a cart. He looks down and there's a woman strained. She says, please take care. And he goes, yes, I will. I'll go to Falsum or something along with lies. And then he has a knife. And then we flash over to the fourth one. And the fourth one is Balance having the psychic attack when Monarch is forced into his head.
Yep.
So those are clearly three very negative moments in each of their lives. But there's that third part where you don't name, and that doesn't sound like anything any of us have ever heard at all in the story. It does not fit Squash in any way. It doesn't fit
because he wasn't even a twinkle in your eye at that point. No, it was always intended to be Caden, which is why I had to have Caden talk. In my original set of notes, Caden doesn't talk at all. It's just Rosita. Sorry, his wife, Rose. It's just her that talks. And as I was talking, I realized, like, I need to show that this is Caden. So I need to have him talk. There's no other way. But yeah, the intent was to be very much, these are flashes. And if they're flashes, I can't over-explain them because they don't sound or feel like flashes then. So this is a flash. Yeah. This is a flash. This is a flash. This is a flash. And I gave just enough context to each of them for them to be able to pick it up. And I think you might be wrong because I'm pretty sure that they talk to Caden about it later.
Maybe. Because
they bring it up. It's not Caden, I don't think.
It's not in this episode, at least.
No, definitely not. I think it's episode after this one, because this one ends on Caden like, oi, oi, you little buggers.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
But, we'll figure it out.
But no, okay. I may be absolutely incorrect, but like it was just so fast and powerful. And I was just like, oh God, like this is this is one of those scenes in movies and shows you watch. And you're like, oh, I bet this is very important.
I'm going to need to 100%. Rewind. There's shit hidden in here.
As a casual viewer who's watching the season after it's done, I could just keep going until the last episode. I'll have it all explained to me. that scene is really good. And I really like it. And like what I said earlier, I don't think they got it. That is not meant as a negative thing, because as a listener, I loved it.
Yeah, I think it's like
adored it.
That scene and the same basically with any of those like overly like grandiose descriptions that I just apparently launched my ass into, whatever. Mm-hmm. Neil makes it sound incredible. Like, I remember the energy I had when we recorded it, because I was like, it was the beginning of a new recording session. And I know it's the beginning of a new recording session because I sound really nasally and sick in this. And I remember being unwell. Like, I remember that being a thing. And I remember having to take a break between the mirrors and between the beginning of this one, because I had to deal with a Nat 1 situation and how to link that into abilities. And like, I remember this was the very beginning of a scene. And because it was probably 2 a.m, I was full of beans. I was ready to go. Hence why my energy level was really fast. And I'm like, yes, I can power through this. So I can hear that. I can hear I'm sick. I can hear I'm full of beans. And I can hear exactly where I start talking at my speed when I'm getting excited. And that is in that little like guitar section that Neil put music underneath. Like he really captured that. And my God, it just sounds so much better with his music behind. I never want to do descriptions without Neil anymore, ever. Because he just
it's so rad.
Elevates it. He's so good.
Absolutely.
Neil, I love you.
Yeah, then the party tries to move on because they're going to go upstairs or leave because they feel like they've kind of captured everything they were going to do. And Balance kind of sneaks into a room to be kind of on his own.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very neat little moment. Again, like Balance doing like a lot of like interesting things in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I found Ral's reaction, I'll babysit the door. And if he takes too long or if I start hearing noises I don't like, I'll break it down.
Yeah.
And Sultana walks off. And in that moment, I sat there just like, they split the team. They split the team so hard right now. Like, yeah. There's no line of sight through any of them. This is terrible. But of course, like, they've already cleared the dungeon. Like, yeah. There's no, like, threats out there anymore. But I did find it fun that this was very much like, it was a very scenic scene when they all three of them go to their own little areas.
Yeah.
I really do wish Raoul had done something with his break. Because then we'd have all three of them doing something in private, and it would have been real nice to see them all flesh out their characters individually.
Yeah.
But alas, there's more than enough time for Raoul later.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh boy.
Oh boy, yes. So this is Laffian going into the other room and having a quick chat with Brainfriend after doing a quick self-assessment of, hey, the mirror, did it change something in me? Did it do something like, mm-hmm. nah? It kind of allowed mm-hmm. you to have access to certain things.
I like that phrasing. Did it change me? It was a very like yeah. kind of...
Like, did it do something like, to me?
Yeah, am I fucked? There's a... Like, he talks with Monarch, and Monarch's like, hey, I'm going to give you, like... Here's an ability. I'm pretty sure you're like ready for it. Like,
yeah.
Go fuck with your friend out in the hallway. And this is probably one of the more memorable scenes from the entire show in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It is Laffian leaving that room and going, hey, Raoul, trust me. And I was like, fine. What are you going to do? And then Arch just going to be like, I'm going to spend all my side points, and I am going to fucking look into Monarch's mind. Like, I'm turning this ability, I'm turning this gun he just yeah. gave me on him.
I love that for so many reasons. And it's one of, like, the first, like, standout things in my brain of, like, you know when people always ask, like, when did players fuck with your plan? Like, exactly fuck with my plan, but I fucking love it. It's not, definitely did not expect to have to do that scene from Monarch's point of view. But, like, yeah, mm-hmm. the idea of, like, he'd picked up the signals that I had been trying to drop throughout the mirror scene. He'd picked up like the slightly iffiness that I was trying to get Monarch to do with Balance mm-hmm. To basically, because I think I mentioned this before, at this point, Monarch was a question mark entity for me. Like, he had been offered the chance to join the Blissful Eclipse, but he needed his body reassembled, hence why Dayton mm-hmm. was helping him basically get some of the pieces in place, and he started manipulating things to do that. And I already knew that there was a conversation between Monarch and Kells, or Monarch and Dayton, or whatever works. Mm-hmm. So I already knew that Monarch would be trying to get himself reassembled, and he was trying to get like Balance on side with like more power and more ideas and more this and more that, and assessing how he is. And because of the actions of Laffian, he ended up not going down the path where Dayton is, which is great, because now he is on our side.
Luckily.
So that was like one of the moments that was like, oh, good, great. He's now taking a step towards like pushing Marnat down a good path. That's good. He's picked up all the signals I put down. I was very proud of mm-hmm. that. But it was like, well, fuck, what do I do now?
I do have to ask, in your mind, did this moment, like you as the DM, in that moment, were you like, well, that's one chip in Dayton's corner for like who Marnock is gonna side with, because Laffian literally just turned around and punched him in the mouth, just like, hey, I'm gonna invade your memories and your privacy because I don't trust you anymore.
No, it wasn't like a haha, I'm now going further towards Dayton. It was always like he was heading towards Dayton. There wasn't like an extra push towards it. Like, that's not how that was. Mm-hmm. It was like, huh, how do I now start manipulating him to do stuff? Maybe I should pay attention to him and actually see what he's doing, which is why yeah. Monarch is so quiet for so long.
Yes, Monarch goes quiet for such a long time that I remember when he spoke next, I was like, wait, he was mad? Oh, right, yeah, shit.
Yeah.
He goes quiet for like 10 episodes or something. It's
yeah,
crazy
he goes quiet
how long
for a while.
He goes.
Like, he offers Laffian the chance to not do this and not break his trust, which is hilarious because he'd been trying to make him do that to Ral. Mm-hmm. But I yep. wanted to play that cagey side, and I was really glad that I got picked up. Mm-hmm. But yeah. It was good. Well played.
I really like that.
As a GM, I as a player love fucking with standard spells and abilities and seeing how far I can push them. And I love having it turn back on me because I just think it's fun. I thrive in that, so it makes me happy.
And yeah, like after listening to the episode and remembering the vision, I can totally see where Arch was coming from. Because you describe like puppet strings controlling him. And earlier, like Art says, like you threatened to take control. I was just like, you know, you got a really good point, Arch. Like if you hadn't done this, you'd be a fool. Like, I would, like not be a fool, but you would have missed the signs. It's like, yeah, I like this scene. But while the two boys are faffing around, we've got Zoltara hanging out with Claws.
I love the effect they'll put on Claws.
So what is that sound? Where is that sound coming from? Because I'm pretty sure it's not you licking your microphone.
Oh, you mean...
It's not you going...
Yeah, that's the sound.
Oh, it's...
And Neil puts an effect on it. And again, Neil puts an effect on it. So you don't hear the OG sounds. Because Neil puts effects on all of Claws because Claws is undead bear. The same with Guardian. I don't know what Guardian's actual voice sounds like. And I'm glad nobody has gone back for ages. The same problem I have with the Spectre. I have no idea every single time I go to play a voice them what their voice sounds like because I can only hear the effects because that's the voice I associate with them. Claws is different because Claws is an undead bear or an owlbear that I've had in the back of my brain for like day dot. So like that voice I can do and then Neil puts the effects on it. But the others, no idea. No idea whatsoever.
And then Zoltara is like arguing with the Guardian and the Guardian says something along the lines of like, where are your friends? And Zoltara's like, I don't give a rat's ass.
Yep. No, see, I love Zoltana's I don't give enough of a shit. I think it's comedy gold. And as soon as I thought that, I then heard the characters say, well, back in my day, we gave a shit. And I thought that was really funny.
Yep. Yeah, it was. I love that scene because it starts out kind of funny. It starts humorous, but then seeing Zoltara go like, "Well, I kind of like. Well, I like Ral. I like both. I don't know. I mean, like, I kind of need them. And just listening to Casey try to battle through Zoltana's thoughts about what Zoltara thinks about those two is very interesting because you can tell there's a small part of Casey who's like, they're my friends because I'm playing with them and they're my friends. But then you hear Zoltara go like, well, I have to hang out with them.
Yeah. Well,
and you can tell, like, if push came to shove, I think Zoltara would beat the shit out of both of them, at least at this point.
And they're still, like we know and love them as bestest friends forever now. But, like, listening back to these episodes, especially these early episodes, I think it changes just before Squash turns up, actually. There is still that really antagonistic nature between them. Like, let's get the fuck out of here. I will kill you if you do this. I'd like to see you fucking try. Oh, you're all giving me a headache of peasants and stuff. Like, oh, of course, I am the best at this. Like, we still see those really hard and gritty edges and they don't get along. And listening back to this now, I'm like, how did we get from there? Why weren't they always friends?
It is a little bit rough to listen to it because you do, it's hard to tell where the character ends and where the player ends.
That's because, mentioned in this episode too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Neil mentioned that. That's close to the end. Yeah. All right. Zoltara's talking to the Guardian and then the boys join. And I liked like how forward Ral is. I'm pretty sure I've said this in every single fucking deal Beyond the Eclipse. I love how much no shit's given forward Ral is. He just walks in like, all right, so what's the plan? Like, where are we going? What do you want from us? he's just like so fucking quick.
Yep. He's on the point. Like, let's get the fuck out of here. I'm done. Are we done? Were we done? No. God damn it.
And then I don't remember what the setup for this was, but it's like, those visions were just visions, right? Like they were not like magical in nature. They're like, they're not actually visions. They're just like parlor tricks. And somebody says something along the lines of like, yeah, like there's no dragons going to be in our apocalypse. Oh, it's because they're talking about Monarch's thing.
Yeah.
Laffian brings it up. Yeah, he mentions like, oh, was there a dragon in the last apocalypse? And Guardian goes, what was it? Dragons have been involved in almost every apocalypse. Casey just goes, Sultana's side-eyeing Raoul.
Yeah.
And you just, what?
Yeah, that was
it's such. It's such a, like, a set-up comic routine. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's some actually genuinely, like, gold banter in this. I know it can be rough to listen to because they still haven't, like, gelled as a team yet. But, like, listening to some of this early friction, I'm like, oh, yeah, I've forgotten how funny this shit is.
it's quite funny. Like, then you have, like, a scene a little bit later when the... When the guys cobble together a plan, we have to find the 7 items and put them on the stands. And Sultana's like, wait, if I pick up something, am I going to get like a voice in my head? I don't want a voice in my head.
30, 40 episodes later, yeah, sure, jump on in, Inverna.
Yep. 10 episodes from now, hey, sword boy.
Oh, yeah. I have Calimorn.
Yep. So, yeah, that happens. And then as they're about to leave the dungeon after they've gotten all the information they can get from Guardian, Soldado's talking about, like, oh, we don't have to save the world, you know, guys. Like, we can just, like, make this somebody else's business and we can fuck off. And Raoul's just like, well, we can't do that. We got the Mind Link thing. Like, what about Kaidan? Soldado says something along the lines of, like, yeah, I'll take care of Kaidan. I've got a plan. And Raoul instantly goes, I will kill you. And it's so fucking, like, raw and quick. I'm just sitting there like, wait, Sultana, wasn't your best friend Raoul earlier? What is happening in this group?
Well, the thing is, like, as far as I understand, and I actually picked it up, is like, don't worry, I'll take care of Kaidan. He'll be fine. I didn't pick up, like, I'll take care of Kaidan. Like, yep. I didn't think that was the result, but I think something in Raoul just snapped instantly of defensiveness. Like, no, this is my buddy. Don't you dare hurt him. Don't you fucking dare. Like, I think, I don't know what's happening in there, but I read it as, like, yeah, I'll look after him. Don't worry, I've got a plan. Like, this is chill.
Sultana's the only one, like, out and about proud murderer in the group. Yep. So it's not crazy that Raoul would have that impression.
Yeah, and I so think it's like, it's interesting that somebody brought it up. Like, hey, we could just leave. Because that was always a tiny bit of a fear in the back of my brain. What if they leave? Well, I'll figure it out and I'll shove the plot at them somehow. I'll make it work. I'll figure it out. And if we become murder hobos, then that's not the podcast for me. But even if we'd gone a completely different route and we left Lindrum behind and, like, Kaidan was, you know, dealt with, whatever that meant, he got a better job somewhere else that wasn't working for Lindrum. Like, we just go in a different path and we just attack the apocalypse from a different way because the apocalypse would still happen. Like, there'd just be a shit ton more dead gods.
Yep. Oh, that would have been an interesting side story or an alternative story.
Yeah, it's definitely a direction that I was like, I don't want it to go in this direction because it's a little harder for me to make sure we hit the right story beats to actually get to a point rather than just murder hobo our way around. But I'm glad it was brought up because it definitely should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey guys, technically we're free. Technically we can fuck off. I'm like, great. I'm great someone brought it up.
Yeah, because I think they meet up with Demi again and she pushes them in the correct direction.
Yep.
But it might be that they go to Lindrun. I don't remember exactly.
I don't 100% remember. I know what's in my notes. And I know what's in my notes did not happen because that's quite frequent with my notes is because I'll write them, I'll look at them and then not look at them for the rest of the session unless there's something really specific that has to be done. And if it really has to be done, I'll probably remember it. So yeah, there's some things in my notes that are definitely not up to date, but there are also things in my notes like Brugrim is going to try and kill Laffian. I never pick up that note again. I never run with it. I write it down, but I never run with it.
Yeah, so the team reaches the kind of fourfold area. And I liked Raoul's, like, he's still like, yeah, I've got bad blood with a lot of people. Like, you guys should not be hanging out with me. You're just drawing attention to me, and it's going to be even harder for me to hide. But they find a place to lay down and where they find Bogrim.
Yep. They go to Bogrim's, like, room. Yeah.
Yeah. And just a little funny interaction that I really liked, that 4905 Balance like throws himself on a couch and Arch goes, I tried something and I got burned for it.
And that was good. Like,
he set himself on fire using his brain. So Donna just quickly, what? And I missed that? God damn it.
And
the three of them are just jiving so good in that episode. They're so like picky on each other. It's fantastic. Yep.
You want to guess where the beanbag chair came from?
I think you've told me, but
it was Neil. It's 100% Neil. Neil didn't think he would have a normal chair in Bogren's place because obviously he has a tail.
Yep.
So he was like, can I have a beanbag chair? I'm like, no, of course you can't have, that's ridiculous. And then I put it in the episode anyway, because I thought it was funny.
I've always assumed that any area that deals with a lot of lizard men and tabaxi and dragonborn, mm-hmm. they just have chairs with like open sides, you know? Like they just get them stools.
Yeah. But of course, that's just not a thing on Discord because we don't have any races with tails. There's no dragonborn, no tabaxi, no lizard men, no yuan-ti in whatever forms they have. Like, we just don't have that over there. We would have adaptions for halflings and gnomes, but there wouldn't be adaptions for folks with tails. So you can probably, like, if you want an architectural difference between the two, it's like everything over in Kena is probably stools and everything over in Discord is probably like high backed chairs or some shit.
And I found it very interesting. So Bogren and Raoul are meeting for the first time, basically.
They met briefly before, but I've forgotten what Bogren's voice and accent was 100%. And I just didn't say much because I was trying to hide it. And then I had time to go listen to the episodes with Bogren in it. I went back through my old files just to pick up those lines. And then I felt more comfortable talking to him. But yeah, like this is the first time they actually get to talk. I have feelings. I have less memories, more feelings.
Okay, so let me open it up with the first, like, what I, like, caught my ear the first time I was listening through it. So, Raoul and Bogren, they're talking about Aemon and about things, and Raoul decides to ask Bogren, like, what was your last interaction with Aemon? Like, what was going on? And he says, oh, I got this letter from Aemon. Saying that she might have fucked up. And then you quickly say, wait, should we be talking about this? There are two other people in this room. Was that you realizing there was no such letter in existence?
No, the letter was in existence.
Oh, okay.
It was actually like Aemon who lured Bogren because she had figured out what had happened. She'd figured out who Bogren was and she wanted to confront him. And she was basically laying a trap, but Bogren had also figured out that she was laying a trap for him. And already had orders that he needed to kill her. So it was like, shit. So the letter is real. It's 100% real. Okay. It always was.
Okay. So from my point of view, I assumed that letter was not real. Mm-hmm. And that was you realizing, wait, I just gave Laffian a power to look back on items.
He had no psi points.
That doesn't matter. He'll just ask for the letter and do it tomorrow. Like,
yeah, but he's not going to have... Maybe he would have held on to the letter. I honestly don't remember what we did with the letter, if it ever physically turned up. I don't remember.
I think it pops up later, but I have a vague memory of it. I'm not sure.
The letter is shown through Aemon's eyes again at some point. I don't think we physically ever see the letter, but I might be wrong. I don't really remember. This was like 5 years ago.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And in that scene, we get the, like, real, like, 10 episodes in, and we get a real explanation for why Raoul was in prison. Like a beat-for-beat explanation. Raoul's mate, Aemon, had been murdered along with another human?
Correct, with a human, yeah. A human named Grisham, who ran the apothecary. Yeah. Which had a pun name, but I don't remember. I think it was called Flasking for it. I'm going to go look because I think I know I made a pun name out of it because I always think pun names for that kind of stuff is just really funny. And I'm pretty sure I did that. That feels like something I would have done.
Well, yeah. So Aemon and this alchemist are...
Or Grishuk. Grisham. I think it's Grisham for him and Grishuk for something in Squash's backstory.
Yeah, Grisham and Aemon are murdered in their bed with acid. And when Raoul walks in, he falls unconscious.
Yep.
And that's the in-game explanation for why Raoul ends up in prison. And I find it kind of interesting that Bolgrim never visited him and Raoul never questioned him about it.
Yeah.
Because I think Raoul, like, Bolgrim says something along the lines of, like, yeah, I can't believe, like, that happened. Like, so you just walk in and you fall unconscious. And Raoul's like, yeah, why did you never say something? It's that is genuinely the first time Raoul and Bolgrim are having a conversation about Aemas' murder and the reason why he's in prison.
Like,
and I'm sitting there like, I know why Bolgrim never visited. He was dying of guilt.
Yeah.
But
and it's also easy to play off of, like, if he never spoke with Raoul, which he didn't actually get the chance to do. He didn't get the chance to, you know, like, the ultimate plan being that he turns up a little bit later, like, with the alibi of, like, oh yeah, I'm turning up. He manages to speak with Raoul and get him to one side and, like, become even closer buddies so that the ultimate betrayal is hard. Like, that's the whole point of the Cult of the Brokenhearted, is to betray someone in such a way that you will break their heart, which is enough to access the mirror. Like, that's the whole point. And his plan was to go do that, but he was interrupted by the law because he needed to be in jail. So he went to jail, and Neil had mentioned that Bolgrim had never visited him because Bolgrim was a creation of Raoul, give or take a creation of Raoul, of Neil, really? Sorry. Yeah. So, like, I had to have a reason, and a very easy reason is, like, if he never spoke to Raoul at all, it's very easy to play off of, like, well, maybe Bolgrim thinks he's guilty in a way. Yeah. Maybe, like, he could deny it to himself all he wants, but the evidence is pretty strong. There are lovers in a bed. They were melted by acid. Raoul was there and passes out. He knows Raoul gets like that. Exactly, like, you know, full of acid and then passes out at high emotional turmoil. Like, it's very easy for Bolgrim to believe the idea, the fiction that, hey, he's the one that killed them. He just could never in his heart believe that Aemon was having a fling with this alchemist. I'm like, well, yeah, of course he can't believe it. He murdered them. That's not really the point. He could play that if need be. So it was kind of like a good reason that I could have is that he never visited because he may have thought he was guilty. So, like, that's a very easy thing to play off. And it had only been a year. Like, that's a good enough not to go visit him, I think.
Yeah. And they talk about their interaction a little bit more. And close to the end of the kind of conversation about Aemas' murder, Bolgrim says something along the lines of, she only ever had eyes for you. That is such a good sentence in retrospect. Like, when Bolgrim's going like, no, I don't believe that she was cheating. I think it was all like a setup. I believe that 100%.
Yeah.
She only ever had eyes for you. And that's like, oh, Bolgrim. Bolgrim, Bolgrim, Bolgrim.
I think I might be missed. I'm actually going to check my notes because I'm pretty sure that, like, the letter that set Bolgrim up to go meet with Aemas so that Aemas could confront Bolgrim about being part of the Cult of the Brokenhearted and doing all these shitty things to make something bigger happen. I am pretty sure I had written in my notes that, hey, this letter contains this, that, and the other. She does something that gives herself away. And I'm pretty sure that I decided the thing that gave her away is that she was not exactly hitting on Bolgrim, but she was acknowledging feelings that weren't there. And Bolgrim knows that's to be bullshit because he knows Aemma. He knows that he'd never have a chance with her. Like, even if, you know, what Raoul was breaking, basically saying, like, I don't give a shit if she sleeps with people. I love her and I want her to be happy. Even should Raoul die, Aemon would never have been with Bolgrim. They may have been really close friends, but he knew that he'd never have a chance because they mate for life. At least that's how my brain sees it. So, yeah, like, she stumbled. I'm going to find the letter because I'm pretty sure I'd written that in there. Let me just... You ask questions. I'll see what I can do.
Well, I really enjoyed that little sentence. I think it was good, and I look forward to hearing what your notes say. And I don't know why, but I find it kind of funny that Sultana just instantly go like, "Eh, that sounds about right. Yeah, Raoul, you're innocent. I believe you." There was something about that, like, dude, 10 minutes ago, the guy threatened to murder you. Like, you are very strange, my friend. But no, like, I get it. Like, they're playing characters. They're moving through a lot of scenes very quickly, and. Yeah, it would be kind of hard to recover from. I think you're lying. You're a wife murderer. especially with, like, Sultana shouldn't throw that name, that kind of a phrase around easily, like, as somebody suffering.
Yeah, I found the letter. I found the letter because I wrote all the letters because I had to every time we, like, further in the future, we do some flashbacks. Like, the ability comes in hard and we do some flashbacks to actually figure out, like, and learn more about it. So every time I said something, I had to write it in, like, verbatim so I didn't fuck it up later in the future. And that involved a lot of me going back through all my old recordings to pick out some of the shit. But yeah, the letter she sent was, Fate Forger, I have something to tell you, something I have to admit. That thing we don't talk about, that thing we don't admit because we are just friends, inverted commas. I know you know what I mean, and I've been putting it off because of Shadow, but I cannot anymore. I need to see you. Meet me today at the house. Raoul cannot know. Firestorm. Like,
so that's not even close to what Bogrim said was in the letter. So that letter doesn't exist, the one that Bogrim was talking
the
about.
The one that Bogrim's talking about, what he says is in it, is a lie.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, an actual letter exists.
And that's why I assume in the moment 5 years ago V went like but why, what about those two fuckers, because you knew if Laffian asked for that piece of paper it didn't exist, and Bokum going like, yeah, I burnt it.
Oh no,
because of reasons.
Yeah, like I burnt it or I would have let them have it. Like, I would have written something and just dealt with the consequences.
But that's a very interesting headcanon. I don't think that ever gets like really outright spoken that Aima, like, I think it gets spoken that Aima had figured Bokrim out, but we never know why or how Bokrim figured Aima out because nobody ever wants to know Bokrim's side of the story.
No, nobody ever wants to know poor Bogrim's side of the story. Alas, poor Bogrim. Nobody wants to know his side of the story, but yeah, I had a reason as why he had rumbled her. And other than the fact he was literally ordered to do it, which he was on the precipice of not, she rumbled what he was up to, which would have completely ruined all the plans that they had had. It ended up being like, I could off Raoul, I could break the orders and still make this work, but she's figured it out, so it doesn't work anyway. I had plans on like how and why all these things were. Like, I had a vague idea hit for hit what had happened, but not like the specific wordings or phrasings, because that's just not how my brain works. Until my mouth opens, it's not real. So everything in my lore and so much in the world lore history has changed because of things we've discovered and things we've learned and things that work for the story. Like, things change. I'm not afraid of changing my notes later to make things work, but yeah.
As they are talking, Balance decides, oh, I want to turn on my aura side and I want
to
feel out Bokrim.
Internally, I panic. I'm like, shit.
Instantly, V starts coughing, then asks more info on what aura side does.
Oh, so I was actually legitimately drinking and I was sick.
Yeah.
And I can hear it. And I was genuinely coughing through a lot of that recording. I think that kind of just snuck itself and stayed in because the next words I say are still infected by the cough. So it needs to have the cough there to explain why I sound so weird. I was actually genuinely drinking and I was genuinely sick. So there was that
bullshit.
Whole thing.
In that moment you took a swig and Arch went like, bullshit, Poker's full of shit, and you're like, wait, what do you mean? What do you mean you're doing aura side? Tell me more.
Yeah, that was a cool move. I appreciate, because I think I mentioned this before, like, I try not to look too much at your specific character sheets unless I need to know, do you have a spell, do you have a way or an ability that directly counters this so that you can get out of this if need be, because it's harsh. There are some harsh things I'm like, no, this needs to happen for story, but sometimes, like, you should have the ability to win and not be fucked over for a story reason. So I that's the only time I really check out character sheets, or if I'm unsure how a certain spell works or something that you've been using a lot or ability that you've been using a lot and I don't understand. So when it was like, oh yeah, I have aura story, I'm like, okay, what's that do? I can see the people's auras to see basically this, that, the other. Fuck! Oh, Bogrim's full of shit. I rolled a 13. Oh, thank Christ. Oh, thank Christ. I would have rolled with it, but like, I was so glad that wasn't a really high success rate. So it means that I could hide a lot of things I wanted to hide, but I could still give out information I wanted. Like, Bogrim loved Aima. I can start dropping those bits in there like really easily now. I can start adding in like, yeah, there is something he's holding back. It's emotions about how he felt, and he would never have told Raoul that and probably still doesn't much. But like, also, yeah, he's lying about a big portion of shit here.
Yep.
So I was glad he didn't get above what I'd put him down. So yeah.
It was when you asked him, like, what does Aura Sight do? And then at some point you go like, oh, right, you don't have any side points to enhance your aura vision or something like that. In that moment, as like a future listener coming back, I'm like, it's so obvious what we just, like, you cough, you're like, what the fuck do you mean? And then you're like, wait, you can't do your good one? All right, yeah, okay. And then you sound cool after that. And it's like, how did nobody pick up on this?
So, you'll catch me doing this a lot. It's like, can you read that ability out for me? And that's for two reasons. One, that's for the audience to know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, I'm going to do Aura Sight. What does that even mean? Secondarily, I don't always know what that means, even though sometimes when I call for it, I absolutely do. But it's a really good way for me to look through my notes and figure stuff out. Like, how am I going to play this? What am I going to do? You're explaining an ability I really only need to listen to out for a few keywords for, like, can look into the past. It does this, does that. Like, all the flowery text that Wizards of the Coast putting on spells. I don't need that. I just need to know exactly how this works. So whenever I write spells for y'all, it's really basic shit. Like, there's no flowery language in Eggbiz. I can't be asked, and I'm really bad at this stuff. So quite a lot I'll ask for that because it gives me time to think over what it is that I'm going to do. And I didn't know what Aura Sight did. I only needed the key ideas. I'm like, okay, how am I going to play this? Because if he can see if Bogrim is lying one way or another, or he can see his emotions, what do I say and what can I hide based on what? It's a 13. Oh, I can give you everything except the juicy shit. Great. Quite often I'll ask for stuff and I'm actually thinking...
Yeah. And then Neil goes on to explain to Bogrim, like, oh yeah, I met my specter. I went to the stalking plane. And Bogrim goes like, stalking plane?
The stalking plane? No, specters. What the bloody hell are those? Or something along those lines. I'm just like, I am full of shit. I know I am.
In this moment, did you know that Bogrim had in the past gone into the stalking?
Yes.
To really? That was a tiny golf clap because I am quite impressed. Because when I heard, like, when I was listening, my assumption was just like, oh, yeah, okay, well, like, Raoul is telling Bogrim about some spooky shit. Like, yeah, whatever. Like, I thought genuinely in that moment you hadn't planned Bogrim that much out.
Yep. So I had to plan Bogrim out a lot because I had to know how he was associated with the cult. Because, for example, if they actually did rumble him early, I needed him to explain what the Cult of the Brokenhearted was. I needed him to go, the Cult of the Brokenhearted started because of this, and then there's these factions that do all these different things, and this specific cult is to do with getting into the mirror, but now that I've told you, I'm not sure that this is going to work anymore, which I hadn't figured it at the time, but I figured out afterwards, actually, it's genius. Because if the person they're setting up isn't the one that ends up being broken hearted because they broke the rules, the person who did the setting up is broken hearted. So there's always someone to activate the mirror. And I hadn't figured out how clever that was until much later in the story. But at that time, old version of V was just like, yeah, I need to explain what the cult of the Brokenhearted is. They need to know. So I need to know how he got involved, what sort of things he's done, why he moved to Falson when he used to live in Heart's Hearth. Like, I had to figure out all the big brushstrokes for Bogrim to be able to function. Because if something did go wrong... And Laffian immediately like, hey, I'm going to be your inquisitor and I'm going to solve the murder. And he actually did. I needed to explain everything. I needed to have everything ready to go. Because if we did it towards the end of a recording session after three episodes, I can be like, all right, and that's the end of the episode. I'm really tired. I'm going to bed. If it's the beginning of an episode, I don't like doing that. I don't like fudging myself around. So I didn't know that he had interacted with the Ixnar of Surprise or that he'd lost Lohir. I just knew that he had gone to the stalking. He had found something in particular and he'd, you know, he'd done this, that and the other and he'd lost someone. I didn't know any of the brushstrokes that were in Bogrim's backstory. I didn't know any of the particulars of certain things. I just knew the big brushstrokes, and one was like he went to the stalking to go get a thing to do a certain other thing. So I had those big brushstrokes in there.
So around this time, Bogrim mentioned that, like, yeah, the house is still there, blah, blah, blah. And Laffian gets super excited.
Yeah.
Super duper excited. Did you as a DM see that coming?
No.
Did you realize that you'd
To be honest, until like, the middle, like, oh, is the house still there? It was And then I just instantly went, of course Bogrim would have looked after the house. Oh, did anything change in there? No, I left it as it is, as a shrine to Ama and all the shit. Huh, did you change the locks? No, can I go there? I don't own the house. That's Rao's home. He gets to decide. Nailed it. That was all improv. I don't know why I decided that Bogrim like looked after the house. I have no idea. But yeah, like the idea of them going back to the house and it being as it is a natural, like, yeah, of course Bogrim would have looked after the house. So yeah, clearly that's, yes, is the answer. Like, he's that sort of friend. He would have done that. And also he cared deeply about Ama and was very upsetting and guilty. There are all those things. And then when the answer is like staring him in the face, like, well, I'm going to go back and look in the past. I'm like, well, fuck, I need to figure something out. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I already knew the big brushstrokes of what had happened, just not the specific details. So I was like, ah, I'll wing it. I'll figure it out.
So that was not intentional. You did not, you did not put a private investigator in the team and then give one of the characters a murder mystery.
Nope.
That's not what happened?
Nope, because the characters were developed independently of each other. So I worked with Raoul. Oh, sorry. I worked with, my God, Neil. I have worked with Neil a lot on Rao, like different ideas and different thought processes. And we were very like, Rao doesn't know what happened and that left me free and he trusted me to go to what I needed to do with that. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about Bogrim. He had one friend and I fucked him over other than Kanan. And then independent of that, completely independently, Arch made Laffian, who was an investigator who did this and who did that. I'm like, yeah, like that makes sense. Like, okay, I'll develop that character. And like, just because I have a murder mystery and a PI on the same team, I'm like, ah, they can solve each other's mysteries. I'm like, oh God, no, I don't want this. But I'll figure it out. Like, again, like I try and keep my plans fairly fluid in case there are big changes. But as it is, I think they investigated a little bit here and there. It wasn't a focus. Mm-hmm. So if it's a focus, it'd been a very different story. But as it was very much to the side of the main missions that they were doing. And it gave me a bit more time to flesh things out in the background too.
Yeah. I don't remember it perfectly, but as we go through the episodes, we'll see.
Yeah.
I always felt like Ama's murder was a bit of a cold case. I don't feel like they had a lot to work with. Like, there was this hot clue. Like, in Ama's poison bed, there was a matchbook from the bar. It wasn't like that.
No, because that's such a cheesy clue. Like, people don't have that. That's ridiculous. That's a storytelling plot thing. Like, there's no other reason for that.
That is a classic.
Yes, it is a classic, but yeah, like I had to be like very particular in what the murder was and how it was done so that I could be like, yeah, so this guy was framed. They would get the acid somehow. Like Bogrim could get it from Rao really easily. The flasking guy could have gotten it. I did check it up. The name of the shop was Flasking for it. I'm a genius and I remember this. So yeah, like I had to actually figure out most of the steps to make this work. So yeah.
Bogrim gets like real defensive when Laffian's like, I can investigate this for you.
Oh, that was
when
like
you
a,
wrote on the...
Yep, that was a godsend. Like, I am an inquisitor. Oh God, I don't want the cops here. Fuck. He can see into my past. Fuck, I don't want any of this. Get the fuck out of here. Why'd you bring a cop here to an underground fighting ring? I have a perfect out for getting him out. Like, yeah. It was a godsend that was mentioned at the moment.
I found it quite funny when you're like, now that Laffian looks back at Bogrim, you can see his aura has changed to this kind of like defensive. You're looking for a word that doesn't sound like
suspicious
guilty or scared.
Yeah.
And Arch just goes like, problem with authority. And you're like, yeah. Thank you, Arch, for giving me a word.
Yeah. That's good.
And I found it fun, like, Bogrim just going like, get the cop out of here, man. And is that around the time you wrote down the little note?
Bogrim tries to kill Laffian. Yeah, that's when I wrote that note. I never acted on it. I literally never set any plans up from Bogrim to kill Laffian at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I never did any of that. I just found that going back through my notes now. I'm like, oh yeah, that was a plan. I didn't do it, but that was a plan.
I think you may have never acted on it because the case goes cold quite early.
Like, yes. It is like a genuinely cold case. Like, yeah, it's only a year old, but like it's on the surface a really shut and closed case. And, you know, What hurt me listening back to this is Raoul trying to figure out why someone would kill Aemer, and he blames himself. Like, there's something I did here that meant Aemer was killed because they're too scared to come fight me. And, like, has anything changed here in the fourfold as a result of me not being here anymore? And the answer is no, because it had nothing to do with it. And listening back, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I understand why people are so pissed because y'all listen to it like in a very condensed area. Whereas obviously we record and have the story told over like at this point years. So like I can understand why y'all are really angry at Pogrom. Like listening back to this episode is so hard. I'm like, and I remember knowing, like, I remember being really nervous doing the whole way through this because I'm like, I'm going to have to lie through my back teeth without blatantly lying sometimes. Like, I have to be able to twist the truth a little bit, but the lies are there and I'm listening to every single one and internally I'm cringing. I'm like, oh God, I'm so sorry. And he goes along with your idea a little bit and oh my God, and I know he's going to give you a false lead. I'm so sorry. Oh, my poor baby. What an asshole.
Absolute terror. And it is really, really heart-wrenching to listen to Raoul talk like that. And it's even more annoying that Pogrom goes like, oh, yeah. And then later he goes like, well, there was that one kid, remember? And meanwhile, I'm sitting there like, blame it on her espionage. Like, she made powerful enemies.
Dude, I know it's dumb and I know that's something I could have done. But there's always a part of me that would have Pogrom try and protect her reputation from that. Because she did a lot of that. Like, the very first episode we meet Raoul, she's sending them on a weird espionage mission. I mean, part of it so that she can sneak Raoul's birthday present into the house. But, like, it is a weird espionage thing. And a part of him, like, wouldn't want that exposed. Because it's so obvious that Aemer was not sleeping with Grisham. Like, that was really obvious. Yeah. So, like, that was never going to be a stain on her reputation. But, like, yeah, there's a part of me that Pogrom is always really protective of Aemer still, even though he killed her. It's so weird. Poor boy. He's doing his best to do to work for the greater good. But, like, he's lost everything. I feel so sorry for him. I mean, he's an asshole, and I'm such a dick the whole way through this goddamn recording, right up to 123 or whatever the fucking episode is. Oh.
It's just, I can see what you mean. Like, Pogrom, in his mind, he's like, oh, well, nobody buys that Aemer cheated, even though everybody buys it.
Like, the people who knew her wouldn't buy this.
Yeah. And then he's like, well, okay, what else could possibly have killed her? Well, there's the espionage thing. Well, I don't want to, like, damage her image. Sure, it's just a Raoul thing, right? Like, we can just make that work. Like, I've already ruined his life, like, irrevocably.
Yeah, but also, like, looking at her espionage would also, like, this is me retro thinking, but, like, yeah, that would also have led to her investigation of the cult, and he couldn't have that.
True. Yeah, so it all fits in place.
That's my retro brain. That's not what I was thinking at the time, but I know thinking at the time, I was like, oh shit, someone can out me. Oh my God, you mentioned that you're an Inquisitor. Fantastic, get the fuck out of here. I will come up with someone to blame. Oh yeah, I'm so good at this. And then I was like, oh God, I feel so nervous because they can just catch me on a lie really easily and I'm so scared. Every time they interact with Pogrom, I'm genuinely nervous. I hate it.
Yeah, the two of them have this just really long conversation and it, like, sweet. It genuinely feels like a old friendship being, like, kind of picked at, like, there's, like, a scab over the surface of two friends that haven't met in a long time and they're just taken away.
I think a lot of that comes down to Neil, actually, because around the others, he's really stilted, he's really aggressive, he's to the point, but he chooses to immediately come in, be relaxed and talk to Pogrom like a friend. Like, we see a side that we have never seen of Raoul up until this point. And it's that warmth is down to Neil. That's that character change. And I adore that. It's one of the reasons I adore playing with Neil. He can play multifaceted characters. They're also really funny. He's really quippy as Raoul and I love it. But yeah, like, it's one of the things I actually adore about, like, role playing with Neil a lot. Like, everyone has, like, their strengths, but one of those is, like, being able to have, like, those intense emotional things with Neil. And I love the shit out of it. No. I'm so sorry. Remind me to never play a character that you'll get very attached to who is just betraying you all. I'm so sorry.
Any other story we're going to play, basically, as soon as you introduce a friend, I'm just going to start blasting.
And then I started blasting. No. I mean, there are ways, and I thought about like other ways that I could like have other characters betray y'all, but I think we're so far through, at least in where we're recorded, that that would be really randomly shoehorned in, or it has to be someone pretending to be them for there to be like a betrayal now. So I think I'm not nervous about playing any of the characters other than the ones that could legitimately kill you all. Other than that, I'm not nervous about playing any of the others because everything is out and out with Bogrim. I don't have to worry about constantly lying and covering my own ass, which is exactly what Bogrim is feeling, and I hate it.
I wonder why you singled out, I don't hate playing any character except those who could actually kill you anymore.
Yeah.
I wonder why you phrased it exactly like that. As we record episode
230-something.
Yeah. When you guys get there, you'll see why we is mentioning this specifically.
Yeah.
234.
Yeah, something like that. I think we're further than that. But yeah, like I just, yeah. There's something that always makes my stomach drop when you interact with Daechin in any way, shape, or form. Like it genuinely makes my heart like just pound in my chest. Even if they're just conversating, even if he's just conversating with somebody else and you guys are in the area and you're over listening, anything like that. Like the idea of Daechin being anywhere near you folks and you do anything slightly to annoy him, or like I go off on one as Demi and I have no choice but to kill her. Like everything around Daechin makes me nervous because there's no reason for me not to pull that trigger. There are a couple of reasons why I might hold back and I try and stick to those if I can, but if I can't come up with a reason, we know he has access to much, much more powerful magic. Y'all are dead, and I can't not do that. I hate it. He makes me nervous.
Quite so. Yeah. So, Raoul and Bokram have this like really intense conversation, and they kind of just kick laughing out. Balance.
Yeah.
And Balance just kind of wanders his ass over to a bar.
Yep. To the monastery upstairs. Yeah.
Yeah. Has a nice little conversation with the barmaid.
Yes, Emily and Colin. So I don't remember if I mentioned this last time, but Emily and Colin are very closely related to Thirsty and I. There's a reason they have certain personality quirks and certain names. So, and also why we have Jim at the bar. That very much belongs to Thirsty and I, as a little nod towards our own little kind of like home game in-world metaverse bullshit. That's just a tiny little nod to them. Yeah.
When you said Jim at the bar, I heard Jens the first time, and I had to go back. Like, no way.
That's Jens's ultimate form. It's just Jim at the bar.
Yeah.
No, Jens wasn't even like a twinkle in my eye at that point. Like,
yeah. And then Sultana and Raoul join Lafayette at the bar, and they kind of sitting there chatting, and then through the door struts a very angry Caden.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I'm like, oh, he's mad because they hurt him and he probably dropped something precious or something. This is going to be a humorous moment. And they go like, oh, don't come in here. We'll talk to you outside. We don't want to like get
I love the thing with like the miming and then Sultana like, I'm going to use the mind link. Dying of laughter at the table.
I do think it's funny that Arch gets a little like, hey, I am a master of psionics. I know how to do my... Shut up, I forgot.
Yeah, that's funny. That's quite funny.
But yeah, he turns around and then they go outside to meet him. And he's like, they're like, oh, we have a big plan and we're going to have to figure everything out. So we're just going to stay at your place tonight. And you just instantly go like, you guys, what was it? You are not welcome in my home anymore.
Yep.
I was just like, oh. And then you say, like, I saw those visions. And in that moment, I'm like, okay, Caden knows what those visions were.
Yep.
I think maybe in this moment, the other three are like, what did he mean, saw those visions? Because I stand by it, I think. Because the reaction from everybody when they saw the visions, nobody went like, did you guys see this? Did you see an elven lady? Did you see a dwarf begging? Did you see a boy being beaten?
Yeah, none but they also didn't really share their mirror scenes either.
Yeah, yeah. True,
and they were true. Quite significant. It's like, did you see those things in the mirror? Yeah, I saw my destiny or my future or something. Like, so Tana is on like comedy gold of straightforwardness in this episode. Like, Casey, you're on point, mate.
But yeah, and that's about the end of the episode.
Yep, we end on the cliffhanger of Caden saying, get the fuck outside, we need to talk. I found you somewhere not my home with my daughter in it to stay. You murdering dad. Not quite along those lines, but
I found that quite a fitting ending. It's setting up the next episode and setting up Caden not trusting them, because Caden's now like, all right, I knew Raoul wasn't a bad person. I guess I was slightly wrong.
I thought, oh my God. Like, I know Zoltana's a murderer. I heard that Laffian is a murderer. I don't think Raoul killed, like, Aemer. Oh, Raoul killed someone.
Oh,
like,
no.
Caden, I think, knows what happened. I don't remember exactly what happens after this. It's just blended in the background somewhere. I think there's something to do with Caden and him talking about the loss of his wife, asking them not to talk to Talis about it. And I think they go and hang out with Demi for like 5 minutes. Like, I don't remember the next episode at all.
Yeah. We'll get into it when we get into it.
Yeah, we'll get there if we get there. All right, let's see if there's anything in here that we've missed in my notes. Shout out to Raoul's fear of being underground at the very beginning part. Like, he's always like, I need to get out of here. I'm getting out of here. It's underplayed, or rather, it's not picked up massively, I don't think, by anyone other than me, because I know what I'm looking for. But like, yeah, he's really thought about not wanting to be down here, and we should thank him for no longer harping on it, because he's just trying his goddamn best. I love you. You're doing good.
He harps on it a lot harder later. He, like, I think it's something like Raoul goes like, why is it always underground?
Yeah.
And that's when the team just goes like, what are you talking about, buddy?
Do you want to know why it's almost always underground?
Why?
Because you can't see the railroads. So if you're going through a dungeon, right? You have a trap and you have a boulder and you have something that has to be passed over and you have a fight and then you have a corridor and then you have a fight. You, as the DM, control this very confined space. You can split the pathways if you like. You can split pathways 4 or 5 different times, but down one of those pathways will always be what you need, even if they keep turning right and keep going further away and down and it's not exactly where you put it. You can just pick it up and move it because everything else can be dead ends. You as a DM can very easily control that environment. You can control what traps they can and cannot bypass. Now imagine you're outside. I can't make you go through any traps. You can see where the enemy is. You can see where he is. You can bypass. You can walk around it. You can fly in the sky if you want to. It's the same, like, how do you attack the Mage's Tower? You fly up the side of it and go in through the top window. Like, having things be inside and underground is a lot more controllable of an environment, especially if you want to give that dungeon feel of like, I have to go over this hurdle. It feels like a challenge when you get to the end. Like, you've gone through all these things. And if you're a DM who manages to like somehow actually give them a reason to worry about timing, i.e. let's not take a long rest between each of these because, you know, something is on my ass or there is a time constraint or something like that. You very much get to control all of these challenges to make the last one feel like a actually earned fight, not just like, I'm going to turn up, fight you, and walk away again. Like, you get to have those fun experiences of like, this is how we solve this trap, because there's literally nowhere else to go. You can't fly over it. You can't go around the side of it. You can't teleport to the other side of it. Like, you are in a confined area. And that's why most things like that are written to be underground or inside a building, with the exception of Mage's Towers, which are really tall, penis-looking things. Like, you just fly up the side of it and go through a window further up and you bypass a bunch of stuff. Like, yeah, you can move all that upwards, but that doesn't make sense if you've only clearly got 2 floors to go above. So, yeah, like, that's why I like underground stuff. I feel like I can control the area a bit more. I can still give some of those classic, like, adventuring party things that you have to overcome. And also, if your characters are overpowered or they're really high level, it helps to grind down resources, which makes the final fight feel like it's challenging, because it isn't always. Like, if you have 4 like level level 10, well-armored, well-thought-out, well-min-maxed characters, anything you throw against them is going to be a breeze if it's on its own. And unfortunately, yeah. unfortunately, because we're a podcast, having a shite ton of enemies, it's really difficult to make sound interesting and for people to follow because they don't have a battle map to follow, to look at. Mm-hmm. So you have to be really good at descriptions and not spend 40 minutes yourself describing what you're doing. So mm-hmm. grinding down resources a little bit helps to reduce the amount of enemies that you get to have. And it also just, it helps that listenability of it. If you have less enemies who are slightly more powerful and you don't have to worry about the fact, like, they have 400 spell slots to do whatever the fuck they want with, like, you can whittle it down a little bit by going through the challenges and putting some sort of time constraint on it. So it becomes a bit more of a fairer fight and easier to listen to with one enemy versus 500 of them, like that sort of thing. At least that's why, in my theory, lots of things are underground.
That's a good, it's a really good explanation. And I think that really kind of shows into your way of thinking of trying to make a interesting audible podcast.
Yeah. Also, like, I don't like fighting in the same 2-foot by 2-foot room, whatever it is, or fighting in the same like field. Like, that's, I want to make the environment interesting because we don't have a battle map that people can see. Mm-hmm. We don't have maps and minis, and we don't play with maps and minis because I'm really bad at that kind of stuff and I find it nitpicky and weird. And yeah, we're an audio podcast, so I need to make things sound interesting rather than I walk across the field and I stab you with my sword. I stab you with my sword. I stab you with my sword. I walk back 2 paces with disengage. Like, no, that's boring. Like, I'd rather talk about the ground breaking underneath you and shards of stalagmite smacking you in the face, or, you know, a geyser going off, or, you know, volcanic eruption, like that kind of shit. Like, have fun with the environment. That's all we got.
Yeah. We've definitely mentioned before on this podcast that, like, I think in any podcast moving forward, if you want to go the cinematic route for fights, listen to the original Liberty dice game that Travis Vandegraaff did. He takes basically every fight, he removes every single dice roll, and the players just state what their character is doing. And if they succeed or not. And then just Travis says if they succeed or not.
Yeah.
He basically rewrites the entire fight scene and it turns from like an hour's ordeal into 5 minutes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the higher level people are and the more enemies you introduce, the longer each of the fight scenes become.
Of course.
Yeah, and that's hard because I don't know if any of it, y'all have been at a table with like 4 people and you have a mage or basically anyone who has magic and they've got like 400 abilities to choose from. It takes effing forever. Whereas like your barbarian, it feels boring because you have to wait an hour to be able to do your 3 punches and that's it, you're done. You're disengaged mentally from it. So yeah, having more enemies means it's going to take longer. Like each round becomes longer and longer and longer until it's like a 5-hour battle. Now, don't get me wrong, 5-hour battles I've been in, not my thing, but I can understand why they may be fun to certain people. They're not fun for me, but they can be. However, you're listening to a 5-hour fight where I talk about, I pick up my sword, I stab you. I'm going to consider what of the 500 spells I've got to do. And yeah, you can cut that out a lot when you're making a podcast, but there's still aspects of that you can't, especially if you include some of your tabletop for entertainment and flavor, which is what we do. Just have to be very mindful about combat scenes. They are the most immersive breaking, in my opinion, which is why there aren't many of them in TLD.
Yeah. All right. And with that, I think we can put a cap on episode 10.
We can. Thank you so much to the patrons who basically got us to the goal of doing episodes 9 and 10. We're very sorry it took us this long. Yeah, and we live in the same house, so we should be able to do this quickly enough, but it generally takes some effort. Apologies if it took us so long, but thank you so much for getting us this far. We really do appreciate it.
Yes, thank you everybody for listening. If you want more Beyond the Eclipse episodes, go ahead and check out our Patreon. We do it per Patreon basis, so if you have $1 to spare a month, chug it our way. You'll see more Beyond the Eclipse sooner that way. Tell your friends and like spread the word. The easiest way to get more content out of us is to have us having a bigger viewers listenership.
Yep.
Then we have a reason or an excuse to spend more time on this. Currently, we are working really, really hard in our normal financial lives, and so TLD is a big time sink. But it's a time sink that we love, and we'd love to have more research to spend time on it.
Exactly. So yeah, we're fitting this recording around other recordings. So we're like, we've been planning this like for 2 days now. Yesterday bailed on us because the weather was bad and we couldn't record. Today I was supposed to listen at work, but I couldn't because I was too busy at work. And then we came home and we had to eat, and I had to listen to the episode, and then we had to record, and now we're recording this, and I've got some other things to do afterwards. So yeah, fitting this in has been rough, but honestly, the more support we have out there on the Patreon, the kind of the better excuse we have, I guess, to slam this in. So again, thank you so much for your support, and I hope you guys continue enjoying TLD.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Beyond the Eclipse. I hope to catch you again next time.
Bye.
Stay safe. Bye.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.